This meeting is now being recorded.
All right, we're going to go ahead and get started resuming our meeting of the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee. We are on item 7, which is the court security survey, which is an action item.
Yes, thank you, Judge Earl. Working with Sean Landry from YOLO, we convened a small group to address this issue that's been brought up about sort of an inequity in terms of how security funding is being dealt with currently. We know that the amounts that were transferred as part of realignment have available to them, those funds, a growth factor to the extent there's a growth in sales tax revenues that support that that funding. And we felt that there was a need to look and evaluate what is going on with our security costs that were retained within the trial courts to see whether or not we should request some additional funding. And so we had convened a group and we looked at sort of different ideas as to how we could determine what, you know, what our, a BCP might look like. And so what we presented here is some options to deal with that. If I may, I'll have Sean sort of walk through those and the discussions that have been had with the group regarding our court-funded security costs.
Sure. So part of what we're talking about is there's about 40 courts that receive absolutely no growth funding except for if they have employees. Not all courts have employees providing that security. In fact, they have private security contracts and a large branch. So what we were trying to do is resolve that issue when we kind of talked about courts that there's no opportunity to enhance security services, and in many cases, security is actually required for these courts. You cannot just sustain the cost of ongoing and increased security. So, as Laco said, we met several times, the committee recommended a spring BCP, and the options before you are to, the first option is to send out a survey, collect the data, and use the data to come up with the funding methodology to justify in the BCP. The second option is to just merely pursue a BCP and incorporate the same funding methodology, same growth rate, rather, as what the sheriffs get. And then the last option is to coordinate with trial court security committee office to come up with standards for growth funding. And why we're recommending the first option is because we want to be able to gather the data and make an intelligent argument. Option two, I think, puts us at a little bit of a disadvantage, and without the data, it would be hard to justify that BCP. That's why we want the data. The third option, I believe the committee felt that courts are hurting now, and that would take a long time in order to come up with staffing standards and to go through that entire process. Maybe that's a longer-term solution, but I think courts need the money now. So those are the options. If anyone has any questions.
So the recommendation from this group is option one. That is to send out the attached survey and from there develop a costing justification to support a budget change proposal. Anyone willing?
I'll move option one.
I'll second it. That was Mary Beth and Kim. Tanya. Any further discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carried.
Okay. Next is it's a part of what we've discussed a bit already in terms of allocation of the trial court trust fund monies that are above the 1% fund balance cap. This is a discussion item at this juncture since we have not completed the review and comments back to trial courts regarding their items that they've excluded to get down to the 1%. But we at staff and had talked about with Judge Earl some of the ideas that there are for options. I know we did get some feedback from Sherry Carter, and she might want to talk about that at some point. Again, this is just for sort of a preliminary discussion to think about what we might want to do, but it's not intended to be an action item yet. So the options 1 through 4 are there, and one is to offset the $22.7 million shortfall. One is to allocate in a similar fashion as the 2%. One is seeing what is going on with the trial court trust fund, if we needed to use any of that to make up any balances, but as I indicated, we're hopeful that the Department of Finance would see the proper thing to do would be managing those additional declines if that were to materialize. And then there were some unfunded benefit costs that you're all well aware of, and the budget in which the Department of Finance reduced our request by $22 million related to their assumption that we needed to implement the pension public employees, the Retirement Reform Act requirements earlier. So those were some options that we had staff and had worked through. We know I'd heard from Sherry Carter that that was maybe a fifth option. I think it relates in some ways to option number two, but if you'd like to discuss that, we could add that to the list for future consideration.
The thought was that perhaps the money could be used for those emergencies from March to June under, since the 2% will be gone, so that might be a good place to hold it. But, you know, we're just kind of open to any of
them. I would say, Mr. Judge Wesley, that thought came to us because at our meeting that we had here a while back, some of the smaller courts were worried about what would happen if they had unforeseen expenditure on the trial or something else that came up during that interim period, and we knew there was going to be at least $900,000 left over from 1%, and we were going to be able to get to that. So that's what indicated the look at this to us.
Judge Walsh?
I think that makes a lot of sense, particularly if I remember correctly what the alleged spirit behind restricting the fund balance as well was. That, well, it's not that we want to take that money away from the branch. We just want it to be in the hands of the branch to then meet needs of courts as needed rather than individual courts hanging on to their money. So I think what Sherry and Jeff Wesley are suggesting is consistent with that spirit.
Yeah, are there other suggestions that we could add to the list for consideration that folks would like us to consider?
Is there a reason it's not an action item? It's just a discussion item?
Well, we don't have the final amount yet.
Oh.
So I wanted that. I think we need to know what is the amount of money we're dealing with, and my understanding we'll have that by the time of our next meeting, which I expect will be probably in December, right?
Or January, or
right.
Both, depending.
Any other thoughts on how we might use this money?
And if you can't now, please email us like Sherry did if there's something that you can think of. If there's something in, you know, like number four was something very specific in terms of unfunded benefit increases, if there's some issues in technology or other areas that you might like. Sean.
Can I just clarify something? The judge mentioned homicide reimbursement. Isn't there still a process for homicide reimbursement?
Yeah. Right.
That just is what got us thinking about that March through June period that we're worried about if the money's not on this issue. It's one time on this.
Right.
So if there isn't anything now that you can offer, then please feel free to email Judge Earl and myself, and we'll add it to the list when the time comes, and we'll discuss it as a group.
Jake.
Just a clarifying question, Lonzo. Maybe I wasn't listening effectively enough, but you're still working with the courts on their allowable.
Well, the deadline for submission, or the requested submission date of the final materials and supporting documentation is October 15th, and then we'll convene the group that includes Brian Taylor, Judge Good, I'm blanking on who else.
Oh, okay.
Rick and Mary Beth. As the group, because that was the group, there was two representatives from the Budget Advisory Committee and the chair and vice chair of SEAC and myself, supported by staff, in reviewing and evaluating those. And so what we will do is we'll look at those, ask questions if they're necessary to clarify and ensure that we have done the categorizations and the encumbrances and the excluded funds pursuant to 77203 correctly. Because we also want to make sure that if we're ever asked externally, did we ensure that we followed the law correctly on that. And also then it gets to the final point of what is the final adjustments, because we know there were some courts that incorrectly posted something and have subsequently told us that, and therefore there's been some adjustments to that $2 million amount. So that's the point.
Me or my staff haven't heard from staff yet. While we did everything perfectly, it doesn't mean that you've agreed to that.
Right, yeah.
So. All right. Anything else on that agenda item? That we will then move on to our information items. Item A, I wanted to alert you to a proposed amendment to California Rule of Court 10.64, which defines the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee. There's a proposed amendment to change membership category for presiding judges. It would provide that a presiding judge, as used in the rule, means a current presiding judge or an immediate past presiding judge. Zlatko and I thought it was important. Presiding judges are only with us on this committee for 1 or 2 years, and sometimes your experience and knowledge of issues that we're working through is invaluable, and we'd hate to see you go. So in an effort to be able to increase that knowledge and experience, we've proposed this amendment. Public comment closed on September 19th. It doesn't appear that there were any public comments, and it will go before the Judicial Council at their October meeting. What this means is that if the council approves it, then nomination cycle for this committee will reopen. And so any of you who already submitted a nomination to continue on this committee will have to resubmit your nomination. It would remain open because there are some folks who may have thought they would not be eligible under the existing rule who now may be eligible under an amended rule if it's approved. And so in order to accomplish that, all of our terms, remember, we were all appointed for 1 year when this changed from a working group to an advisory committee, and I believe that 1 year was supposed to end in October or November. All of our terms will extend through the end of December, and the new group will come in January. We asked to push this through kind of on an expedited basis so that we wouldn't get new members in March, because by March we're almost done with the work that we have been doing, and I didn't want to change over in membership 3 months before the fiscal year ends. But there will be a change in membership come January. The chief is going to appoint staggered terms, so there could be 1 year appointments, 2 year appointments, or 3 year appointments. And we should know that in January. This also means that the makeup of our subcommittees could change depending upon who our committee members are. So I just wanted to alert you that that is pending before the council at their October meeting. Judge Walsh.
Given that the term begins in January, are judges who are now assistant PJs but who will become PJs in January eligible?
They would not be, because the nomination period is going to be, as I understand it, it's going to be maybe the month of November or November through the early part of December. So I don't believe assistant presiding judges would be eligible. That's my interpretation of it, but I will check with the council and Justice Miller after the meeting in October. Any questions about that?
We no longer have co-chair.
Oh, and also...
That's uniform across all advisory
committees. The Judicial Council, or Justice Miller, has also notified Zlatko and I that there will only be a single chair to this committee. All of the other advisory committees only have a single chair, and although Zlatko has been co-chair, he will no longer be co-chair come
January. And if the chief reappoints me, I will continue as chair, and I suspect whoever sits as chair would continue to have Zlatko on their left-hand side during the course of that meeting, or right-hand side, and
worked.
Stephen Chang right there. So, any questions or comments on that? All right. We'll remind you, again, that you'll have to resubmit your nomination papers and what that period is. All right.
Next is a presentation by Stephen Chang regarding the dispute resolution program distribution. And I'll turn it over to Stephen.
This is an informational item. I think the report sums it up pretty well. We wanted to inform you that the County of Merced has requested a DERPA dispute resolution program distribution, which is authorized by Business and Professional Code 470.5. So they're requesting the maximum distribution of $8. And the effect of that is to reduce the revenues that support Portland-based allocation by an estimated $36,000 a year, depending on the level of filings every year. This is similar to the Children's Waiting Room, in which not all counties, of course, are participating operating a program. And so in the case of the dispute resolution program, only 39 counties right now are getting a distribution, of which only five are not receiving the maximum of $8. And if all 58 counties were to receive the maximum distribution of $8, the loss to the revenues that support from court-based allocation would be about $250,000.
And I think before there's questions that we will need to discuss before this issue is over about the children's waiting room process. But are there questions about the dispute resolution program distributions and how they occur, and any questions about Stephen's presentation? Very good. We had brought to you before this issue of the children's waiting room funding, and we felt that there needed to be an evaluation, and maybe Judge Earl talk about that and getting a group together.
At the July Judicial Council meeting, the Judicial Council asked this group to make a recommendation regarding how far in advance of opening a children's waiting room could a court request a distribution. And so they want our recommendation on that. The other issue that exists in terms of funding for children's waiting room, and the question that we need to answer and make a recommendation on is whether we would request of a court that no longer operates a children's waiting room, whether they return any unspent distributions. Currently, there is no policy on that. That money would then be available to other folks who have a children's waiting room. It's not available for anything else, right? And so those are the two issues that we need to work through. Is that wrong?
I'm just thinking, if it was unrestricted trial court trust fund money, when you receive it children's waiting, it has to be for that only. We believe when you put it back into the trial court trust fund, then it goes back into the pot for distribution.
Correct. So we do need folks to volunteer to work on this work group dealing with children's waiting room issues. I have Kim Flinner.
There's Brian Taylor.
Brian.
David Yamasaki.
Do I have a presiding judge that would be willing to do work on this issue regarding children's waiting room? Okay, well, Zlatko and I will delegate.
Look for an email and don't have us on their spam list.
You think three's enough?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Next, we're going to have an update from staff regarding a revenue into the IMF. That was going to be Frank Tang on the phone describing the 50-50 excess revenue distribution. I think this is an important revenue into the IMF, and wanted to give you an update on that. So, Frank, take it away.
All right. Good afternoon. I apologize for not being able to come in. And 50-50 revenue, as you said, as you can see from different charts, a couple of points I want to make is that from 2003 all the way to 2013-14, the revenues have been consistently going down. And then when you look at attachment C2, which is a list of each one of the counties, how much money they actually deposited to the IMF excuse me, since 2003 all the way to 2013-14. And I just want to point out a couple of major declines. Say, for example, Los Angeles, 2003 we had a 10.4 million, and last year, 2013-14, dropped down to zero. And then Orange County, 2003, 5 million, and it dropped down to 652. And then the San Diego, 4.2, dropped down to 1.7. That's dramatic. And then Santa Clara as well. The last one I want to point out is Ventura County. They had $2 million, 2003, and it dropped down to only 600,000. So based on this information, when you look at it, from 58 million 2003 and the peak of time 74 million, which is 03-04, down to only 27 million 2013-14. So this revenue, I don't know, okay, how much time is it going to be taking coming back? That's the information I want to give to you. And then the second thing I want to mention to you is that in terms of a distribution, anything over 2003 is the base amount, which is $58 million. We would have a prorated amount to be distributed to the county where the revenue is increased. So up to 07-08, we had distribution back to the court. However, since 08-09, there was no revenue distributed to the court, obviously, because the revenue in total is much lower than 2003's base. And then there are a couple of charts for your information only. When you look at those 8 or 9 different accounts that the revenue contributing to 50-50 split, you'll see several of the bigger ticket items has been consistently down. Initially, we saw the indexing and recording fees is kind of driven. However, this is not. This one seems to be coming back a little bit. The rest of them are still, you know, like going down. And then attachment to C5 would give you some kind of a flavor in terms of a line chart. You'll see which one is going down and which one comes back. Really, pretty much a small one is kind of a flat. And then the bigger ticket items is going down. So this is the information I want to give to you, unless you have any information or any questions to ask me.
And again, the reason why we think this is important to understand why IMF revenues are going down, and this is such a big part of the revenues. And I think the last time we talked about this, I think Mike Planet had talked about, if I recall correctly, just the real estate transactions and what you're seeing. You can see it's a dramatic reduction from 74 million down to 26 million. That's a massive, massive reduction, and obviously that's put a strain on our ability to use the IMF for branch needs. Yes, Mike.
I'm looking at this, and I look at the drop-off we've had. You know, the drop-off in the citation processing fee and the traffic schools. Consistent with the pattern, you know, the past few years with fewer citations, traffic is wild. And I know that's not everywhere, but I think that's pretty uniform around the state that's dropping off too. And so, I don't believe everybody's driving the speed limit, but
and the thing,
rural areas lose some sight as much because they can't come to court.
Yeah.
So this is part of the result of the budget cuts.
Yeah. And, you know, what makes it hard for us to project this, I think we get this data once a year at the end of the year, so it's not as if we can get trend data to really project a line for folks. So it's a hope and a prayer that, you know, our projections come in or better. A lot of data here, but it doesn't come in a monthly, quarterly basis project during the fiscal year. Judge Good?
Mike, when you talk to finance about this, what do they say about this declining revenue?
Manage it within the resources you have.
It's not a question that we need to backfill this for you.
Their focus has been on trial court operations straight, and that's what the you know, the 5% in these last 2 years, and they're agreeing to the $60 million 2 years ago. We've talked about it. They, their first recognition is, well, why are you transferring $20 million out of this fund? And I say, but that's because we're covering prior budget cuts. They had committed to working with us and looking at the IMF, and now they've sort of said, you guys work on your own solution. So they've sort of diverted focus away from this IMF as an important, you know, part of their review of the budget, and focusing more on the trial court operations side of things and the benefits. So if we have a BCP in for it, but, you know, part of what we've been working on with solving the problem is whether or not, you know, there is a need to then, and rather than cutting ourselves, asking for general fund revenues to backfill. But I think that they might say, we're giving you general fund. If you wanted to put it anywhere else other than trial court operations, that's for you to come to the council, or the council to come to the administration and propose that.
And then we'll find out when you have a look at those charts, for example, with Chief Blueprint, about how much the court funding has gone down over the last few years. Does that include this reduction as well?
No, because we're only looking at the operations side, not these special projects that are funded out of the IMF.
This is an additional reduction to the branch that we've not really been talking to the legislature about very much.
Not in terms of not as much. Been focused on the WAFM gap, now the trial court trust. But we do have a BCP to them to have this dialogue, to discuss the solutions for the IMF. So it was managing it within. You know, we as a branch had said we're going to reduce $20 million out of this fund and move it to trial court trust fund. And so we've said we've lowered it as a priority as it relates to trial court operations funding. We in and of ourselves have said that, but now we have to justify these programs going forward as being continuing the need for resources, not just for us to cut and live within the revenues. I think there was some other, was there another? No, Mike? Okay, Rick.
So much of the downturn seems to relate to the economic downturn. Mm-hmm. I wonder if a lot has to do with just the people's ability to pay, and compounded by the fact that fines have been increased so much during this time that people have been almost still their hands on the refuse to pay. And so the economic downturn puts greater stress on the courts, which is sort of a double stroke.
And we've looked at collections to see whether or not there, you know, there's some correlation as a growth in the gap. And it hasn't grown, per se, that much. We don't know if they're just issuing lower levels. Yes, Sean.
So I don't know if this is accurate, but to your point, we've seen a huge increase in felonies and a huge decrease in traffic citations. And the theory that's going around locally is AB 109. And they, agencies don't have enough resources to put them on the street doing citations. They're shifting to a different kind of help. So, we're working to
that first. And this is Rick again. I remember that happening when they implemented three strikes back in the early 90s. And the shift in law enforcement really did have an effect on our minor same thing.
And then something swirling out there is the proposition. In fact, that's going to happen. That's trial for us.
Okay, are there any other questions or comments for Frank or the group? Hopefully this was helpful just to, again, give you some information about how things are going.
Thank you, Frank.
Yeah. Thank you.
Next, we're going to talk about reimbursement from the Trial Court Trust Fund, Program 4545, which is the interpreter appropriation. Part of the council action was for us to report periodically on the amounts of reimbursements from the TCTF to courts for this purpose. We have Patrick Ballard is going to give us a brief update on this issue.
Yes, and I want to mention that Donna Hershkowitz is also on the call in case there's to answer any programmatic questions that you might have.
Patrick, you might want to speak a little louder.
Sure. Just to go back, just a brief background, in January of 2014, the Judicial Council expanded the allowable interpreter costs that could actually be funded from the court interpreter 4545 appropriation, and that was appearances in domestic violence cases, family law cases where there are domestic violence issues, and also elder and dependent adult cases, and court interpreters for indigent parties in civil cases. They also directed this committee to come up with the methodology to allocate the unused savings that started in 2009 to 2012-13, which ended up being about $12.9 million. The Budget Advisory Committee made a recommendation at the April meeting that the savings be allocated based on region and not a court-by-court allocation. And about a month ago, so fast forward to today, about a month ago we sent out a template to see where how the costs were. It's a year-end template that we send out every year. We do distributions throughout the year, and then there's, you know, a true-up year-end template that's sent out for the court interpreter program. And as of September 24th, we had 57 templates submitted by the courts. We have one missing template, but based on our preliminary estimates at this point, for what has been spent is 92.844 million, which is about $137,000 above the budget act appropriation of 13-14, which is 92.794, of which 92.707 is can be used for reimbursement of eligible interpreter expenses. We do so we have $137,000 that can be used, that the savings that we have there can be used. However, just because there's savings, you still need to get expenditure authority. And during 13-14, we did seek expenditure authority of $2.4 million. So we do have expenditure authority. We'll be doing that again for 14-15. So we are. So the next steps that we're going to be working on is finalizing these numbers, because, again, these are preliminary. There's a few courts that we still have to follow up. We have some questions outstanding with. And we will be, once we have that information, we'll be setting up regional budgets for 14-15 based on the established process by the Judicial Council. We will also be sending out a mid-year template to get information to do a projection for this committee and also for the Judicial Council, and also to be able to go and seek additional expenditure authority. And that's pretty much it. That is the update at this point. I do want to say that we do have 12, you know, based on the fact that we've spent $137,000 of the unused savings this year, we have still $12.8 million left as unused savings. Are there any questions?
I have a question for you. What this is saying is that last fiscal year we spent $140,000 more than was appropriate in the budget act.
That is correct.
And this was based, one question I have is related to the DV expenses. So there was a DV family law interpreter program with the mission. It was a grant program, and then because the action of the council was made, it's a straight reimbursement. So the $2.3 million, was that more than was originally in the grant program?
It was $1.73 million in the grant program.
So arguably, we'll say $600,000 more was spent on DV and family law than would have been under the grant, and about $86,000 on civil cases, right? So $700,000 for DV over the course of only a few months, correct?
Right.
And only in some small number of counties were there any case, any indigent cases and civil cases covered because of where the implementation process sat in each of the jurisdictions, right?
Right.
So I mean, I kind of lead to the question here that that's actually not a small amount of money in a very short period of time with a very small sample of courts. So I understand what you're saying is, well, there's $12 million we need to spend here. But I think we also have to remember that's ongoing expense, right? If we're going to continue that and continue to provide that access to people in a court system, yes, it's eating through the fund balance, but that's going to be a pretty substantial amount of money that needs to be conveyed to, you know, the funding agency, because that's going to be an additional cost, right? So, you know, I know these numbers look small, but as long as we keep in mind that was a very small period of time and not everybody had a chance to implement because of labor agreements and other items. So I just wanted to make sure we're keeping that in mind, because that actually is kind of a shocking. It's a little bit bigger than I expected, actually.
And that's why we're going to be sending out a mid-year template to get a status so that we can see where we're at, you know, for the second half of the year and see where, you know, and then based on that information, this committee will bring that information to this committee and then also to the council and make, at that point, you know, could make recommendations depending on, you know, where we are at that point in time to the council.
Sure. Expanded into every area that was prioritized by the council, with the exception of civil harassment, and we'll have that done probably within the next few months. Our MOU's been signed, and we've expanded. We've done some restructuring, and the consolidation plan that closed 8 courthouses has made it a lot easier because we're now down to 5 and things like that. To make it easier to cover that, it spread to all 38 courthouses. So the amount of money that Los Angeles will require to do that expansion, we're trying to keep to a minimum, which I think is a good thing, because I think it is really irresponsible to provide an ongoing expectation of this level of service with what's done. And so we're trying to do it in a manner that we can sustain it. That's one of the reasons there's so little money there. We do have it in our MOU. And like I said, in the next few months, we'll have all of the case areas prioritized by the council covered. I don't know if we'll ever be in a position to cover family law and all civil, because with 38 courthouses and 600 judicial officers, there's not enough resources in the state to do that. So, you know, I just think we have to be really careful about how we're approaching this, because I'm with Jay. The last thing I think we want to do is to just rush out there and provide it, run out of money, and then have to take that resource back.
Judge Good and then Mary Beth.
Patrick, I'm not sure I'm following all of Jake's math, but do you have an estimate as to, given the burn rate that we're seeing now, how much of this $12 million will have been spent in this year? What's your best guess?
Right now, we've spent $137,000. For 14-15, we have, I mean, in terms of we can use the DV amount. At the beginning of this calendar year, we did get information from the courts that told us that they would be spending a little over $3 million for DV, you know, family law with DV, and elder independent adult case abuse. And that, as you see, was less than that. In terms of civil, we really don't have any information on that. So it's really hard to do a projection. That's why we're going to be going out to the courts mid-year to try to, you know, see if they have a better sense after a few months. But again, you know, there's still, I believe, 3 regions that are still doing impact bargaining.
But the only MOU that's actually been signed is my region. They're still in negotiations.
Right. That's what I, yeah.
They're still in negotiations. They can't necessarily expand yet.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mary Beth, and then Rick and Mike.
What I was going to say is earlier this week or last week, David and I had a call with Kurt and Donna, and this issue was raised, and so we just yesterday had a conference call with the different region chairs to get a sense, and with Ventura and Solano, to get a sense of where everybody is. And Sherry's exactly right that LA's the only one that really has gotten through the meet and confer process. The rest of the state has not. Solano and Ventura did not have to go through that process. So they've implemented, and we have, you know, some information from them. And you'll even notice on this sheet, at least, it's not showing anything outside of the DB arena. But for the reason, you know, both Jake and Sherry are mentioning, you know, we have to treat this like one-time money, which means we approach it totally differently than we would an ongoing program, so we have to proceed cautiously. Anyway, we'll be meeting again and talking again with Kurt and Donna, and as a result of our meeting, there's some takeaway that we'd like to discuss with them on other ways this money could be spent, but to also provide them with the information so that we can explain to the council and outside people who are interested in this issue why it's not like all of a sudden we've opened up the floodgates and we're just providing interpreters to everybody and this money is going right real quickly. But the regions, because many of them were in different other negotiations, this is going to be a long process just to get through the meeting for process. We have this piggybacking in some regions did were in the midst of VRI negotiations. Others did this negotiation first and vice versa. So there are a lot of moving parts. But SEAC, I think, will be staying in touch on this and looking further into how we might best utilize this funding.
We had set up that meeting with Eric Beth following a session we had sitting down with the United States Department of Justice, and they're concerned, of course, as you recall in their investigation in their letter, was whether we were getting this surplus out. First, they were concerned that we were going to try and redirect it. Second, whether we were getting that out. So we're walking, I think, that line that I think, Judge Good, you're raising appropriately, as well as attempting to demonstrate to them that those dollars are getting out and we're using that to expand interpreter services. Thus far, they've been satisfied. They've been actually pretty reasonable in sitting down with us now and feel like we're making some progress. And if we get the legislation signed, I think they'll be happy on that as well. So I think we need to make the effort to get it out, but with the caution that it's still one-time funds, and we've got the question on, is the legislature going to step up on any piece to actually get us there further in all civil cases?
Rick?
Well, just quickly, to Jake's point about the perhaps surprising rate at which it's been spent thus far, we have been in negotiations in Region 2, but we're about to sign, and we've got some fairly sizable courts with some big needs, and so that rate of increase may increase exponentially, very shortly.
David.
Thank you. The other thing that I wanted to point out was that because of a negotiated increase that will take effect in October, the burn rate is going to excel much faster and potentially have an impact on that remaining fund balance, especially if we exceed the appropriation amount. So you know, the point that Sherry's making about proceeding cautiously is for a very good reason.
John?
There will still be money left over to fund the mandated.
That's the first priority.
Any other questions for Patrick?
In terms of we may have the money for the mandated services, but considering we're moving into new case types, we may be robbing Peter to pay Paul, and those interpreters that we would have needed in those mandated may now be doing other sorts of things, which is sometimes a consequence we're really may have to deal with in the future.
All right. Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you.
We are at item E, allocation of judicial branch workers' compensation program premiums for trial courts, and I think David Yamasaki is on this agenda item. Item E.
Workers' compensation.
What's
your final act?
I think it's yours, actually. Madam Chair.
The chair's cheat sheet.
Okay, do you have the chair's cheat sheet?
It's on the agenda.
No, the chair's
on the agenda.
It's just an update.
It's on the agenda.
Oh, okay. So one of the issues that we talked about at the last meeting was perhaps taking a look at
how the costs for the workers' compensation program were being distributed to each individual court. And I believe we have 57 participating courts in the program. And the thinking was that with the funding reductions that each of the courts are experiencing as a result of reductions in the budget and the acceleration of the WAFM reduction to the historic funding model, many courts are changing pretty significantly their staffing levels from year to year. And, of course, it's a three-year average of staffing as well as it takes into consideration the actual claims that are being processed within each court. So 50-50 variable consideration, claims, staffing levels, and the thinking was if a court is dramatically reducing its workforce from last year to this versus courts that may be able to hire back some of the personnel, perhaps the staffing numbers may disadvantage courts who are reducing their workforce and having to pay, presuming that the staff is there, as opposed to courts maybe increasing staff, maybe locked into a formula from prior numbers that were submitted because it's a year behind. And in looking at the impact, taking those considerations, but perhaps taking the most current 7A information, the fact that it's based on a three-year average produced very, very minimal change. And I guess that's one of the positive things in looking at a three-year average, that it doesn't cause a court from year to year to sustain huge swings in workers' compensation expenses. So it appears that the formula that was developed and distributed that would identify what each court's contribution would be or expense for workers' comp seems pretty accurate and appropriate going forward in this regard. So any questions?
Anything you want to add?
No, this is Tanya. This was an issue that Dave and I had talked about just as his brain was about to come to a close. And we really did think that we would see some major differences because there are a number of courts who, took bigger hits from an employee standpoint over the last number of years and now are starting to hire. It was a surprise to me that averaging out of the three-year actually came out pretty close in line with what was going on. So, what we really thought was going to have a big impact certainly didn't.
So the methodology, I think,
proved itself.
Seems to be very sound.
It proved itself to be appropriate.
Any other thoughts on that issue? We have reached the end of our agenda. I did want to update you on one other work group that the funding methodology subcommittee decided was necessary moving forward, and that is you may recall that this year we did not receive full funding for employee benefits, mainly for the retirement costs, and it was attributable to the employer-paid portion of employee retirement costs. And this body made a recommendation that for this year we wouldn't change how we allocate benefits, but that we would look at it, given the governor's message, in future years. So we have put together a work group to start looking at how do we account for this, should WAFM account for this. And Chris Volkers is going to lead that effort, and the other participants that we've selected are Judge Walsh, Judge Boris, Mary Beth, and Rick Feldstein. The goal is to come up with a recommendation in December or January and bring it back to this body. But that group is going to be meeting here soon and wading through that very fun issue. So, are there any other issues that folks wanted to address, or are there any agenda items that you would like included at our next meeting? Then I think we're adjourned.
No. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
Have a safe trip back home. Thanks all on the phone.